I just see you right now, like doing the Iron Cross, like never. Vince Vaughn with the cigarette in his mouth in old school. Welcome to the show. I'm joined today by Jeffrey Wolf. It's a flexible.
The flexible, maybe not for long. We'll see. I might change it.
Jeffrey, maybe not everyone who listens to this initially will know who you are. So right. If you don't mind giving us the Jeffrey Wolf elevator pitch.
Of course. Yeah. Strength coach out of South Florida right now, primarily based out of Clearwater, Tampa, for those that, you know, a little easier to locate. I own my own facility. It's called Strength Culture. Own my own online training, I guess, company, brand, whatever you want to call it, platform, also called Strength Culture. I've been doing this for almost 12 years now. I've probably been involved in every aspect of fitness, from physical therapy to group fitness to, you know, brick and mortar gym to online businesses. I mean, if there's a part of this industry that's been touched, I've touched it all. A non-weird way to say that. I've done it all.
He hasn't been handsy with me.
No, so, I haven't touched him yet.
We got plenty of show left though.
But yeah, that's primarily what I do now. My facility is a semi-private facility, and it's very small. It's only about 2,400 square feet. But I guess you can say all my operations are based out of there currently. Like I said, most of my business is online. I have a contract with a local high school that I do the strength conditioning for their football team. Nationally ranked, very, very competitive high school football team out of South Florida, Clearwater Academy International. This school is basically it's a football school. Plain and simple. That's what majority of the high school kids are there for. They come from international, so Canada, Europe, Africa. I mean, at this point, basically, you know, Germany, and they've had kids from everywhere. So
it sounds like IMG. A little bit.
It's a little bit. They do well. They've played IMG's B-side and beat the brakes off of them.
Wow.
I don't know that they'd be competitive with the A-side.
Yeah.
There's still it's very interesting in the national level of high school, because even though they finished last year, I think, at like 68th nationally, there's still a huge gap between the top, I would say, probably 25, 30 teams.
Sure.
And then like going from there. But I think the school they're getting more and more recognition. They're growing more and more. I mean, I think, don't quote me on this, but I think this last class, they just sent 12 to 14 D1. So basically all their senior class went D1.
Jesus, dude.
You know, for the most part, the only ones who may not go D1 are just some of the local kids. But otherwise, if you come to that school to play football, you're going D1. And if you're not going D1, you're definitely at least going high D2. So it's interesting to be around. It's fun to be around.
Yeah.
It's a great environment. Football has a culture. You know, we're all, especially in America, like we're very fond of our football culture here. Mm-hmm. It's fun to be around. I'm not a huge football fan myself. Like I don't plan my weekends around it or anything like
right.
that. But I understand the sport and I just love being around it. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, my clientele is very ranged, especially online, but in person, I would say probably the past 4 or 5 years, most of my focus has been on high school athletes. Mm-hmm. This primarily would be the main sort of, I guess, age range. And then, of course, kids that have gone to college and then they'll come back, you know, maybe in the winter break and then summer break and stuff like that. I've trained pro guys. I do have pro guys online. I've had a couple pro guys in the gym this past year. But if I'm being honest with you, when I was with ATG, we trained a lot of pro guys. It's not my favorite. I really actually like high school and college more than anything.
I understand that. I can see how that would be.
High school and college is definitely, I like high school the best, to be honest with you. I really think that as a strength coach, I think that's probably where I have the most impact.
Yeah.
Preparing them for college. Preparing them for what they're going to deal with in college, and then teaching them how to lift and how the whole strength training plays into the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Right. So I feel like I think that's why that's my favorite sort of range. And I think that's why I've really gravitated towards that. I've gotten very close with a lot of my athletes that I've trained, especially one that I spent a lot of time on. I spent about 6 years training him. I mean, he's basically like my little brother at this point.
We're
super close. I'm super close with his parents. So, yeah, it's just, that's what I do.
I tend to agree with you. Like, there are pros and cons to working with every group. I've run the NFL offseason program here. It's awesome. It's a lot of fun. The energy, you know, at times is just elite, you know, when the music's playing loud and we're throwing weights around, like that's awesome, dude.
Yeah.
It's fun. But then there are things that like you don't get with guys that are at a pro or an elite or even like college level, a lot of guys. That you get with the high school experience where let's say you start working with a kid who's 14, 15 and you get an opportunity to watch them transform and you get to develop a relationship with them and ultimately see like dreams come to fruition.
Yeah.
God dang, what a special thing.
Yeah. Especially like where I'm located. I think it's true for all cases, but I think that this school in particular, a lot of these kids come there because this is their ticket out.
Yeah.
I mean, this really is their ticket out of the situation they're in or the place that they come from. So to watch these kids come and I mean, come on, when I was a kid, the dream was to play, you know, college sports. And,
right.
But I mean, it didn't work for me. You know, I just wasn't the athlete. That was,
same, you know Jeffrey. Know what I mean? So, yes, I do know what you mean.
You know, let's just be honest. You know what I mean? Washed up athlete, and that's just what it is.
That's right.
But I love sports, and I love being involved in it. And I guess most strength coaches probably are.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. But I don't know that the experience of training this team necessarily reflects because I am very blessed in the sense that a lot of these kids are. They're just freaks. I mean,
yeah,
they just really are. Like in a good way. Like their body awareness is really, they move well. They're just very bouncy. And, mm-hmm. and a lot of them come in and they're already very strong without even sort of any exposure to weightlifting or at least very, very little. So it is a bit of a skewed perspective with this team in particular. You know, the other day we were going to like train Nordics and I mean, basically the whole team could at least do the eccentric, just nice controlled eccentrics down, which is, you know, so many people struggle to even do that. And so
right.
It's like when you're given literally, you know, 30, 40 kids and they can basically all do it. It's like, all right, like
that's pretty nuts.
It's a little bit of like, that's just, you know, some people just start with more than a foot in the door. You know what I mean? They're already kind of through the door and it's like, you're just there kind of fostering that and making sure that nothing goes wrong.
Right.
Right. So,
yes.
But it's still fun nonetheless to watch it happen. So
can you touch on, so you mentioned that you've kind of had your foot in the door in a lot of elements of fitness.
Yeah.
And just from conversations you and I had, you know, you have your experience, and influence with Poliquin.
Yep.
And then CrossFit even.
Yeah.
And then you've worked in a clinical setting and like rehab settings.
Yep.
Can you touch on just kind of how all that stuff has melded together and how it's helped influence you and shape you to be the coach that you are?
Yeah. I mean, so I guess you kind of have to go back to me being an athlete. I was actually a baseball player. Baseball is notorious for, well, at least historically notorious for not really liking to train.
Yeah.
We didn't train.
What's the saying? There's a lot of bad bodies in baseball.
Yeah, 100%. You got some really bad bodies that can launch a baseball 500 feet into the
sky. Right.
I mean, it's just insane. Or like throw 100 mile per hour fastball.
Yeah.
I mean, it is interesting because baseball is always...
it's changing a little bit though now, right?
It's definitely changing.
That culture has shifted.
I would say the culture shifting. I would say the caliber of... I don't want to say the caliber of athlete. It's just that from an outsider looking into baseball, not really knowing the sport, I think what you will see is some more athleticism kind of coming to the sport.
Yes.
In terms of just general athleticism.
Yep.
I mean, you know, if you ask any pro guy, like, you know, hitting 100 mile per hour fastball is very hard to do. I mean, even the pros can only do it a quarter of the time.
Right.
Average, right. So it's like, it's very hard to do.
Yes.
It's in that sense, the hand-eye coordination aspect of the sport is very difficult. But from a physical standpoint, it's not incredibly challenging, right? It's just not. So that's basically all I did. I played a little bit of basketball. You know, this was when I'm 33 now. So, you know, 20 to 15 to 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I played a little bit of basketball in the off season, back when off seasons actually existed in high school sports.
Right.
To do something in the wintertime, because, you know, I spent most of my childhood, at least that period, that window of time, in North Carolina. So, you know, winter could still be very cold. So you couldn't really play baseball, and they didn't have the facilities like they do now, indoor facilities and stuff like that. It just didn't exist. So right. you had to play basketball, or you didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I graduated high school, my introduction to the gym was probably like most guys. It was like a local rec center, going with a handful of buddies to the rec center and basically kind of bench pressing, kind of doing some chin-ups, kind
trying
of
trying to get a sick pump, trying to get a girlfriend,
really training
dude.
Legs, you know what I mean? Like, it was pretty much, that was my first exposure to fitness, playing pickup basketball. Like, yeah. That was like, you know what I mean?
The golden days.
Exactly. And then like 2009-ish, 2010, I got into CrossFit. Now, I consider CrossFit in that day and age to kind of be the golden era of CrossFit. Like, mm-hmm. It was still very new, relatively. It was still very fresh. Most of the people that owned boxes were like ex-military or military vets or active duty military, but maybe, you know, National Guard or something like that. Like, it, CrossFit at that time was very integrated into sort of the, what do they call it? The, not combat, but tactical kind of scene. Like, that was really the main draw initially. So I did CrossFit, but I was really just bad at all the weightlifting stuff. Part of it was just didn't have the flexibility or mobility to really hit the weightlifting positions that needed to be done. Couldn't really, like, was not, especially compared to now, could not squat, could not really do snatch, could not do any of the Olympic lifts. But what I really did excel at was a lot of the endurance-based stuff and then the gymnastics, like the bodyweight stuff.
Yeah.
Looking back, I had a lot of rotational, like when you play one sport where you literally rotate to the left your mm-hmm. whole entire life, that's really what you get good at. So a lot of my weightlifting stuff was very asymmetrical, and I would always find myself rotating. So at the time, instead of me trying to like figure it out, I kind of just gravitated within CrossFit to what I was good at, which was like the endurance stuff that didn't really bother me, stuff that didn't affect me.
Mm-hmm.
Through that kind of, at that CrossFit gym, actually, some of the coaches did some Poliquin stuff, I would say not in its purest form, in the sense that like they weren't just Poliquin guys and that's all you were exposed to, but while I was in CrossFit, I started getting exposed to a lot of stuff. That's when I really started getting interested in training. So guys like Kelly Starrett and Christopher Summers,
who in their 30s as a coach doesn't have a copy of Supple Leopard rotting somewhere?
Yeah, 100%. So it, you know, that was sort of my first real introduction to that world, because I was so interested in the gymnastics element and the muscle ups and the chin ups. At that time, I really started looking into Christopher Summers' work, who did gymnastic bodies. And then I kind of segued into that realm and started working within mostly gymnastics, bodyweight, strength training for a while. It was through that content that I really started working on my mobility and stretching, at least in a more advanced sense than the sort of Supple Leopard stuff. So moved away from bands and foam rollers and whatever, and really mm-hmm. got into more stretching. You know, whether you want to argue stretching it works or not, what I can say for me is that it did allow me to open up and hit positions and stuff that I wasn't able to do before. I mean, flexibility is a huge part of gymnastics. Like, you have to be flexible to do 100%. A lot of that training.
So, my daughter does gymnastics, and there's the competitive side, and then there's like kind of the fun side.
Yeah.
And my daughter, she goes 3 times a week, and she decides one day, Daddy, I want to try the competitive side. And the coach was like, well, I don't usually do this, but I'll let her try. By the end of the class, I look through the glass to check on her, and she's mouthing to me, I don't like this, because they were making the kids stretch and they were making them do a lot of strength movements. I mean, these little girls are 6 years old. It's like 100 sit-ups before you can leave.
Yeah.
My daughter was like, I'm good, Dad. The stretching hurts.
Yeah. Yeah.
They do it. They start young, and look at them.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of general preparation that goes into gymnastics. Like, yes. A lot of people think flashy skill work in gymnastics, and obviously that's there, but I don't think people understand the general preparation capacity that goes into gymnastic strength training, like legitimately.
Yes.
You know, they see Olympic stuff and they see cool stuff on the rings, and, you know, it's like people are so infatuated with like muscle ups and things like that. And I get the appeal, but like that's not even a skill in gymnastics, right? That's just like they don't even muscle up anymore. It's just an inefficient way to get up to the, I mean, it's, right. There's so many ways to break down that sport without even spending tons of time on it. But the general preparation is so elite and so hard in that sport.
Yeah.
That it just was so challenging to me for a long time. And I think that's what really fed my interest was it was hard. It was hard, but it was also to me rewarding.
I just see you right now, like doing the Iron Cross, like never. Vince Vaughn with the cigarette in his mouth and old school. Just incredible.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, even I think Iron Cross is like a B-rated skill, and it's like gymnastics.
Really? Goes
up to like, what, F or maybe even higher now, which is like, wow. It's that's not even like a.
That's child's play.
That's child's play.
If I did an Iron Cross gymnast right now today, yeah. my hands would be stuck on the rings and my body would just yeah. pull apart from my shoulders.
Yeah, well, you just would probably.
No chance.
Yeah, implode. I'm like, spontaneously combust. Yeah, it's. So it was just really challenging. It offered a unique perspective. You know, to training, especially because like calisthenics was very popular for a long time, but it was just the structure and I think the discipline of gymnastics, it was just really fascinating to me and I really enjoyed it. I don't know, there's not really much other, you know, many other ways for me to chop it up. But the stretching definitely helped. It definitely at least improved range of motion, allowed me to kind of get back into weightlifting the way I wanted to. And it was actually through Coach Summers, where I actually got some introduction to Poliquin through his forums and stuff. So then I started doing a lot of Poliquin's work, and that's when I really kind of got back into barbell lifts. And now I was able to use the flexibility and the mobility that I had gained from training gymnastics elements and pursuing that for some time. And by no means at any high level, even from like a general prep perspective, I you know,
yeah,
it was a lot of just basic stuff, and most of it was stretching, mobility, flexibility work.
Yeah.
And then got back into Poliquin stuff. I could finally start squatting and deadlifting without shifting and all these other crazy things that I was trying to clean up at the time. And obviously through that, a lot of exposure to a lot of different, you know, Poliquin was a mix of everything, Olympic lifting, powerlifting, you know, sports specific
sports, yeah, track stuff,
tracks. I mean, yeah. It's like that was really his through his stuff that I sort of got exposed to the broader scope of actual like sports training.
Yeah.
During that time, I was also working part time. Well, not full time for a physical therapist, but part time trying to start a gym with somebody else. That fell through. Got with Ben Patrick, ATG, did the online ATG online stuff. That also fell through. And then at that point, I was like, you know what? My only safe bet at this point is me. So yeah. That's what I'm going to focus on. That's what I'm going to do. That's when I started Strength Culture. And then, you know, that's kind of like the fast track of where I am now. But over, I would say, through ATG was when I really started working with a lot more of an athlete population from on a performance side of it. And then I've just kind of continued that as I went away. And I also do a lot of work with other coaches and trainers too. So
yeah,
I would say that's the bulk of my audience or sort of my clientele. And that's kind of where I am now.
So, who would you say right now are some of your biggest influences in the training world? Or who are people that you look at and you say like that guy or that girl, she gets it?
I think Poliquin was probably my biggest influence from a career perspective and kind of gave me like, it was through his stuff that I really finally started, like I was like getting it, if that makes sense. And then also gained my confidence through like training, because there is something intimidating about working with athletes, right? Especially when a lot of the athletes that you get are just better athletes than you. So it's like, how do you try to justify, well, what do I have to offer to these people that, this population that I'm not an athlete, like not at the level that they are. So,
right.
I think just my knowledge base and then just like confidence level, also just through my own physical development too, I started to get more and more confident. So I would say he was probably the big initial sort of influence, you know, especially like Poliquin Principles was a book that had a huge impact on me in terms of how I viewed training and programming. But now, you know, I kind of mix a little bit of every, I mean, the thing is I've done everything. I've just done everything. If there's a certification out there right now that exists, I've done it. And I'm not going to like start throwing people under the bus or anything. Cause it's not something that I talk about often. You know, a lot of people sort of they find these training systems and then they kind of just make their identity part of that training system.
Right.
You can name anyone. There's no, not to pick on anybody. Just name one, you know, FRC or PRI yeah. or WEC method or functional pattern. Like there's an infinite amount of training systems out there. And I've just kind of always been a guy where I'm very fortunate that because for the past, 6 to 8 years, a lot of my business has been online.
Yeah.
It awards me a lot of time to actually continue to learn,
yep.
continue to read, continue to take courses. And that's just what I do. Like if it's out there, I grab it and I try to learn what I can from it. And I've been exposed to a little bit of everything, but I would say over the years, Bill Hartman has had a pretty big influence on how I've sort of view, because the biggest thing for me was like, okay, I have all this information from all these different systems and models.
Yeah.
What do I do with it?
Yeah. Especially, what the fuck do
yeah,
I do
what do you, now? What do you do with all of it?
Yeah. Right?
And because once, when you gather so much, and I can see the appeal to just grabbing a system and staying with it. Right. And because when you branch out and you try to learn from all these different things, now you have tons of information and now you have to sort of sift through that information and you have to really kind of figure out what is important.
Yep.
And what is not as important.
Yes.
What for me, I've always looked at what are the overlapping principles that are most alike. That's probably where I should focus on these things. Whereas I find that a lot of people tend to get distracted by how things are contradictory to one another, or well, this system says this, but this system. I think that if you can look into these different systems and you can see commonality, that's probably where you should focus. Because I do believe that most people, if there's commonality, that's probably the closest you're going to get to the quote unquote truth of
yes.
training or whatever that means.
Sure.
So that's just where I look. And Bill Hartman's model for me, where a lot of people go into his model and they're like, what the hell? I don't even know what he's saying. For me, it didn't do that. For me, when I looked at his model, it pulled everything together. It made all the different models make sense. Even the ones that contradicted one another, because then you start to learn the importance of language and then you start to understand, oh, these are just, all these models are just different languages.
Yes.
And if you really get deep into these models, you understand that a lot of them are actually saying the same thing. They're just using different language to talk about it. And then they get mad at each other because it's like you're watching, like on from an outside in, I can see it and I go, wow, these guys are literally arguing about something they agree on. The problem is they're just using a different language to describe it. And so they're arguing over what language they're using. And right. I think that's where a lot of people come to. So I would say his models probably had the most influence over how I've created my model, how I look at movement. And then I would say that the PRI, like their sort of three-dimensional viewpoint of anatomy, really changed how I looked at movement, because a lot of my anatomical education is two-dimensional, like everything else. You know, you learn that a hip, a glute abducts and, these very just two-dimensional planes. And why we all acknowledge that there was a transverse plane, like Hartman just did this thing where he kind of just made it all make sense to me. And so I would say he had the biggest influence, but I still like to lift weights. I still like to train. You know what I mean? Yes. So like, I find that just that crowd, because I was actually talking to Pat Davidson about it. And I would say Pat Davidson has had a huge influence on me as well. Mostly his book, Rethinking the Big Patterns, because what I find that Pat did very well is he took Hartman's model and applied it in a way that like meatheads can make sense of it.
Yeah.
And you can still enjoy training and you can understand the consequences of training. And if you understand the consequences of a lot of heavy lifting and training, mm-hmm. you can also kind of understand how to mitigate that to a degree. I mean, we have to understand that everything we do has consequences to some degree. And I think our job as strength coaches is to mitigate or offset all of as much of the negative consequences as possible. And that's just really like how my job is. I don't really look at my job as necessarily trying to improve the performance directly of the person in front of me. I'm really trying to just make them generally better mm-hmm. and then not impede their sort of natural development as an athlete. Am I not making them worse?
Yeah.
My ego doesn't allow me to really just take credit for the development of an athlete. I think there's so much that goes into it. There's a lot of variability that goes into it. And I think that like, as long as I'm not making them worse, and they're just not just flat out plateauing and stalling and they're not making progress at all, I'd say, okay, I'm a net positive to this person, but I refuse to just take credit for, you know, and you see that a lot. It's like,
yep,
when things with athletes go right, strength coaches want to jump out there and be like, yeah, that was me. But then when shit hits the fan, they're nowhere to be found.
Right.
They don't want to take responsibility.
Yes.
You know, I don't think that's a necessarily like a good space to be in either. I don't think you want to start blaming yourself when things go wrong either. I think you just have to understand, like, you only have so much of an impact. And as long as you are in control and doing all the things right that you can actually control, that's really the best you can do as a strength coach. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that a lot of us, we're just kind of grasping and we're correlating certain things without really being able to connect the dots. So I just kind of go, okay, my role as a strength coach simply is general preparation development. It's just simply making an athlete bigger, or stronger or leaner, or what, you know, the basic physiological function. And many athletes are different. Some need to get bigger and stronger. Some are strong enough, but they need to get leaner.
Yes.
And whatever. So I kind of find my role of like helping all these people just sort through the bullshit and like, what's the most important, and really like, That's just kind of where I found myself now is in that space. Like I view the role of a strength coach in sports is general preparation.
Yeah.
I think that good athletes are going to transfer the sort of physiological adaptations very well, mm-hmm, because they're good athletes.
Yeah.
I have seen kids develop in the gym and become better athletes on the field, but I've also seen kids get better in the gym and they're just still shit athletes on the field. So it's like, I've seen it all. So to say that I can directly influence vast amount of kids, like, and for sure say yes, like what I do in the gym directly correlates to them being a better football, baseball, soccer, blah. It's hard to say. So yeah,
well,
I don't know.
So I think to touch on a couple things you said, like, you know, if you're going to be willing to take credit for successes,
yeah,
then you also need to be willing to take credit for failures.
Yeah.
And then the other side of that coin is probably, in my experience, a more actual, accurate representation of the amount of impact we're able to have is like,
yeah,
you know, you do the best you can to set people up for success.
Right.
Am I the reason why someone is or isn't successful?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah.
In my opinion, the answer is no.
Right.
Right. I can, and you know, I think to varying degrees, depending on the person, the athlete, the situation, the context, the circumstances, yeah, you can have more or less impact.
Right.
But at the end of the day, they're the ones who go out on the field.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are playing between the lines and you know, when right, the whistle blows, not us.
Yeah.
So I appreciate your approach,
yeah,
to that. You know, you mentioned helping athletes sort through the nonsense,
yeah,
and you try and bring the things that like matter, that are right, going to move the needle.
Right.
Generally speaking,
yeah,
what are the things that move the needle for your athletes? And let's stick with the high school athletes.
Getting stronger.
Yeah.
Getting stronger.
Can I jump in right here? Getting stronger is such an unsexy answer right now. You know what I mean? It's like,
it is.
If at least it appears to me that, you know, if you say getting strong is can really make a big difference, or it should be a priority, you're a meathead, or you know, or it seems unpopular, yeah, at current moment. So can you just dive into that a little bit and talk about your experience with that?
I think it goes back all the way, now that I have kids, it starts now from the earliest of ages in terms of school. I mean, I was just talking to a parent the other day who has a kid who's in kindergarten, first grade, something like that, early grade school. 30 minutes of recess a week.
A week.
A week.
Whoa.
Okay. When I was in school, I remember going to recess like three times a day. You went almost first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
So it was almost as soon as you got to school, we had a recess. Before or after lunch, you had recess. And then you had another window of time later in the afternoon before you left for the day where you had recess again. You just moved a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think kids these days just don't move as much as they used to. They don't, from a super young age, I don't think they explore general physical development as much. And then I don't think that, and then I think parents want to specialize kids way too young. Yes, obviously if you want to get good at something, the more you do it, the better you're going to get to a point.
Yeah.
I'm sure we can get into that a little bit. I think that the rise of travel teams and AAU and all these things are actually doing way more harm than good for most kids' physical development. They're, you know, they're money grabs in most cases. And sure, it might help a few standout kids that are probably just already standout athletes. But yeah, for the majority of like a lot of these kids, it's not going to do them really any good. But I think that just general preparation from a young age, kids just aren't as physical. They're not getting as much activity. And I think that's really where it starts. I guess the best thing to do would be for me personally to apply some context and situations in which I've acknowledged this. So for instance, one of the kids that I spent a lot of hours, 3 to 4 hours. Three to four sessions a week where I probably spent 90 minutes with him for probably about 6 years. Kanan, I started training him. He was about 12, 13, something like that. Was playing like middle school basketball, both knees. And just was young and was just generally weak, just didn't have strong anything. You know, he was a string bean. He was teeny, teeny, tiny. And, you know, he just initially wanted to not have knee pain and play basketball. We just got him stronger. We didn't do any sort of, you know, we just train all the basic stuff, you know, got him stronger. And over the years, we also, you know, worked on mobility. Like it was all of this stuff that we work on as coaches, putting on some muscle mass, but his primary objective was basketball and he just was generally weak. And the good part is his father was aware enough to recognize that he needed some sort of training.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we did. And he just trusted the process. And for years, we finally got rid of the knee pain and he was playing basketball and he was dunking. And it's not just the physical, like the physiological aspects that people, like everyone wants to focus on that. The biggest change in this kid that I actually saw was a psychological change. And it was, he became more and more and more confident in himself and his abilities over the years. And I think that more so than the strength is actually probably what transferred to his ability to get to the place he's at now, where he's a D1 collegiate decathlete.
Wow.
And we transitioned that because by the time we were getting sophomore, junior, senior year, okay, it's time to really figure out what sport you want to play. He was trying to do track and field. He started by doing track and field in the off season of basketball to stay in shape. But he was just getting pulled in all directions because high school sports, it's not seasonal anymore. I mean, these coaches expect these kids to play and practice basically year round.
Yeah.
And that's what he was doing. So for basketball and for track and field, and he was still training with me. And it got to the point where he was just getting run down and I could see it. He was torn between what sport he wanted to play. You know, at 6'4", whatever weight he was at the time, like if you haven't been developing as a point guard, because that's like if you want to play point guard at D1, at least this day, he's 6'5", 6'4". But at the high school he was playing at, he's a center. He's never going to develop the skills. Like, I'm not even a basketball coach, but I could tell you right now, he wasn't going D1 to play point guard.
6'4 is not going to cut it.
It's not going to cut it.
Yeah, for center, I mean.
So, you know, he needed to be at point guard, but of course high school coaches are incredibly selfish. It's about them and their record and their school and their job at their school, and they don't care about anything else. They say they do, but not all. I don't want to make the generalization, but I would say the majority don't. It really is about them. And this coach was never going to allow this kid to excel at a point guard. And so anyways, I kind of said, look, we looked at his track numbers and with his track coach was like, look, he has a real shot at actually being like a track athlete. And so that's what I told him. I said, look, man, I think it's time to decide. It's time to choose. You're not going to go D1 and play basketball. I get that you love playing basketball. You can always love basketball. It doesn't, like, I would never take that away from you. But I just approached him honestly and was like, I don't have a dog in this fight.
Yeah.
Your dad sends me the money to train you every single week. I'm going to train you no matter what. Here's my honest opinion. You need to become a track athlete. That is your only chance at going to D1 school. Yeah. And he's at Iowa now, and he's a D1 decathlete. And the physical aspect, yes, he got bigger, he got stronger. And for his size, I mean, he was a strong kid. But I think the confidence of him also just realizing all of those things was probably the biggest push for him. And it gave him some internal motivation also to continue pushing, because he just became more confident. He realized, yeah, you know what? I actually have a real shot. But he was like this introverted kid, wasn't very social, wouldn't talk much. I mean, he's a totally different kid by the time he graduated high school. And I think that's actually what you see the weight room offers a lot of young boys, is it just, you know, it improves the confidence in themselves because they see, you know, these all these different areas of, especially their physique and their athletic sort of improve. When you're strong and you're big, like you feel strong and big. You know what I mean? And that really does reflect. But that's, yeah, I mean, that's sort of, he just needed to get stronger. We didn't do anything fancy for his knees. He just didn't have strong quads and he just didn't have strong hit.
Like, and was
just
jumping all the time playing basketball.
Like a baby giraffe. You know what I mean? Doing, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of basketball and track. And it's like, him and his father both will tell you, like, it was 100% the strength training made him who he is today. There's obviously many other variables, but they acknowledge that personally. And I really do think that, like, if you can get kids young enough, I think that middle school to high school age, I think that honestly is where training is the most important. I think it's the most important from a general preparation standpoint. I think most kids need to focus on building just a solid base in middle school and high school, so that way they can start to wean down how much time they spend doing that. So now they can actually buckle down and focus on their sport. Because the closer you get to the pro level, the more your resources need to be allocated to you just becoming a master of your sport and your position. Mm-hmm. The training at that point is like enough to keep you strong, lean, athletic, whatever. But I think once you get into the college is probably the last stop on that train. Because I've seen kids come back from college and they're just a 4 years of weightlifting and then basically being fed buffets three times a day.
Sounds pretty sweet.
You're gonna get big and
that
strong.
Sounds nice, yeah.
But I think for me, it's like teaching kids how to lift, how important that training is, and then sort of how to take those principles into a college weight room, because you're gonna go into a college weight room. And yeah, it's a huge staff and whatever, but there's 100 kids in there lifting weights. Yeah. They're throwing shit around. And it's like, the more you know as an athlete or a student about your training, and the better you understand that, your chances of surviving that 4 years in the college weight room are probably gonna be a lot higher.
Goes up dramatically.
Dramatically.
You know, so we talked a bit about high school kids, they play year round. Yep. They never get an opportunity to cross train in other sports. They're highly specialized. And I have a lot of athletes like this I train. With these kids who are highly specialized, when you get them in, what are some of the things you're looking at in terms of, like, how do you go about training them?
Getting into athlete territory, especially where I'm at, because here's what I found. A lot of strength coaches will niche and bias a certain sport. Why? It's just very easy to look at a hockey player or a basketball player or a baseball player and understand more or less the mechanics of the sport and how that influences their body. What mechanics do they need? What mechanics do they use frequently? What kind of asymmetries are going to develop from their sport? Because it's absolutely going to happen. It's a lot harder when you're a private coach, when you get athletes from track and field and football and baseball and basketball. And while I think that a lot of coaches think that each sport has very specific mechanics, I don't really necessarily agree. I think the mechanics of, like, running, throwing, or whatever are all the same. So I kind of look at, A, what kind of, you know, shit for are they dealing with? Because a lot of kids are dealing with a little this, a little nagging this or whatever. And so I'm just kind of looking at, okay, you know, basic stuff too. What are they good at? You know, some kids are really good at deadlifting and hinging and they have really strong posterior chain, but they can't use their knees for crap, or they have a really weak upper body, have a really strong lower body, or flip that. So it's definitely an individual basis. But the main thing I kind of look at is, are there any, like, drastic asymmetries that they develop from specializing too early? Like I said, I was a baseball player. My body only turned left. It did not turn right. Okay. It didn't. Yeah. So
very,
I had
very, very Zoolander.
Yeah.
Of you.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Excellent. Exactly.
Uh-huh. So I think that's really the biggest thing is that if you specialize too early, you just establish patterns in your body that are going to typically just be very asymmetrical. And I think that I don't view asymmetry as necessarily a negative thing, but you do have to understand that if you just use the same tissues over and over and over and over, and if you never really expose your body to other positions or things like that, like, I think that's where a lot of that stuff comes from. So, very rarely have I ever got an athlete where I've, especially at the population that I work with, where I go, well, you're just way too strong. We don't need to focus on strength training. Like, we only need to, you know, that. But the biggest thing, and the thing that you were talking about yesterday, and I think that's where this conversation is really going to hit, is I've realized you can't periodize and program for athletes anymore. It's especially at this age. I think in the high school, again, my high school football team's a little different because these kids are here to play football. They're on a football schedule. They do have a legitimate on season, off season, or whatever. But if you're like at a public high school or something like that, chances are that that's not really the case. Like, you know, like I said, very early in this podcast, is this team is sort of unique in its circumstances. But a lot of my other athletes, it's like they still need to get strong. And I need to just introduce their body and just give them more options. You know, it really at the end of the day is, a lot of athletes just get really compressed and stuck and immobile. And so I find that just from a general health perspective, the more options and the more positions that an athlete is capable of hitting, regardless of whether it's sport specific or not, they just feel better. And it's very hard to perform at your best when you feel like shit. And I think that's like one of the things that these performance coaches sort of don't really think about. It's like, well, everything needs to be sport specific and joint angle specific and whatever. And it's like, yeah, eventually that person's just going to feel like shit because they're just not exposed to anything else. And it's like, you always kind of have the brakes on, you know what I mean? And there's a freedom that comes with just getting stronger and being capable of owning different positions or, you know, postures or whatever. There's a freedom that comes with that because you don't have this hesitancy. You're not always kind of riding the brakes. And it's like, I have guys that all the time that are, I can only really go 85%. I can really only go 90%. Cause when I go beyond that, I start to feel this or this starts. It's like, imagine if, and they're really elite. Now imagine if you could just add 5%, you know what I mean? And, yeah. And it's like, people don't see the value in that. Everyone wants to look at KPIs and metrics and stuff like that, but a lot of people don't ask the athlete, how do you feel?
Yeah.
How, you know, yesterday your athlete came in, what did you do today? Yeah. What are you doing the rest of this week? How are you feeling? Like, yeah. No one takes the time to even ask the athlete that. So my football team gets periodized programming, but almost all my other athletes, it is on a day-to-day basis. All their training is auto-regulated. My track athletes, all auto-regulated. I mean, almost all my other athletes are auto because their schedule is such a toss-up and what they do in their training is such a toss-up. And then a lot of the times it's like, can I undo all the crap that they're doing, you know, over here? Like, that kid you had yesterday, he looked pretty well developed, but if you ask most kids, yeah, I squatted today. It's like, okay, but what did that look like?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Or what, like, in what capacity? Like, there's a lot of questions we have to start asking. So,
you know, just because we called it a squat doesn't mean that that's what occurred.
We don't have the same image, right? Like, yeah. Like, your version and my version can be different, but,
yes.
You know, I that's really kind of it now, as I've realized, like, a lot of my programming and periodization education and stuff that I've learned over the years is kind of out the door. It's like, when I saw you doing that yesterday, I was like, wow, okay. Like, I've been doing the same thing. So I think there's some truth here. And I think a lot of kids just, you have to take it on a day by day basis.
Can we talk about that? Like,
yeah.
You know, so I think so often coaches and beyond coaches, I think people in general, there's a way that things are supposed to be done and that's the way you want to do them. And so in an effort to do things, quote unquote, the right way, you go above and beyond to try and force something to fit into your idea, your concept
right.
of the way things are supposed to look.
Right.
Any time in my life where I have belligerently adhered to that sort of thinking, I've come up short. I've ended up frustrated. The people around me who I'm interacting with become frustrated and tired because it's not adaptable. It's not flexible. It's incredibly rigid.
Yeah.
I think people love rigidity. I think there's a certain kind of person that really likes the certainty of knowing the way things are going to look.
Right.
I also think that what happens with experience, if you're being honest with yourself, around what is actually going to help either you or the person across from you, you kind of have to, or at least what I've learned has been that I'm only serving myself if I'm trying to make things fit my worldview.
Right.
It's all, and is it really serving me?
Right.
Probably not.
Probably not.
And it's hard. And I think this is a lesson anyone who becomes what I would consider to be an expert in any field. It's like the same concept of like, here's the stuff you learn in school and then you get into the real world. It's the same thing to me where it's like everything's periodized and it's really pretty and we're going to peak at this time and you should have a plan.
Yeah.
Of course, you should have a plan.
Yeah.
But if that plan means that you don't have the latitude to be able to make training, informed training decisions
right.
when new information comes in,
100%.
Are you really coaching? I would say you're not.
Yeah.
I would say
you're not either. I would say you're autonomous at that point. You're just basically running on mechanics. It's just like, this is the system. You have to fit within this. And if you don't, well, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Tough luck, dude.
Tough luck. Sucks for you. Sucks. I just wasted 4 years of your life. You know what I mean?
That's a hard pill to swallow.
Uh-huh. But I think that a lot of it comes down to people. First of all, everything is black and white to a lot of people. What I've learned, especially through Hartman, is that everything just kind of exists on a spectrum. Yeah. There is no black and white. And I think that you can have a rigid system that has flexibility.
Yeah.
They can both of those concepts can exist at the same time.
Yep.
They both can be true. But I think a lot of people just, one, have poor understanding of vocabulary, period. Yeah. I mean, the average reading level of Americans is like a third to fifth grade reading level, and it's pushing more and more towards a third grade reading level. I learned that through marketing. So as I'm trying to become better at marketing my product, I learned, well, the reading level is comparable to my toddler for most Americans. That's insane.
That's nuts.
So when you understand that, it's like, okay, you know, it's like the way you communicate things is very, very important. And I think that like a lot of people just don't actually understand the definitions of the words that they are using. It's like you can have variability, but variability does not mean chaotic. It does not mean random. It just means that there's options that fit within X amount of, the constraints of the system. Every system has constraints. So it's like you can have that and still have variability exist within it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, I'm not just like grabbing stuff out of the air I'm operating on principles and systems and models and all kinds of things. It's what I base all my information off of.
Yes.
But you have to understand that we are an open system that is constantly taking in new information, or at least in my opinion, we should be.
Yep.
And so if an athlete comes to you with information, again, I think you hit the nail on the head. I just don't think a lot of coaches are getting enough information about their athletes.
Yeah.
They're not asking enough questions. They're not asking the right questions. It's just, you're going to come in, you're going to do this, and that's it.
Yeah.
Without understanding anything that's any context whatsoever of the person in front of you. And it's like yesterday, you figured out everything that kid's doing this week.
Yeah.
Everything that he's already done. But what you narrowed in, and what are you not doing this week?
Yeah.
And then what did you do? You gave him exactly what he wasn't going to do this week and all of these other things. And I think a lot of times that is the low hanging fruit for a lot of people. Totally. Everyone wants to focus on what are they doing, when it's like, what are they not doing?
Yeah.
We should be looking at what is based on how I operate on this, on priority levels of whatever physiological development or things I'm trying to develop in this person. What are they not getting?
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, that's what we need to focus on. Because if I have a kid that goes to his weight room, he's squatting and benching and doing all this stuff in his high school weight room, why is he coming in and doing that again with me?
Yeah, because I like it,
because that's my system, because that's what I was taught in it without asking. That's how most people approach it.
Yep.
That's how most people approach it.
I think a principle that's helped me that I've found sort of cuts through all of that stuff is, it's not about me, I don't want to be right. I want to get it right.
Right. It's good.
I don't need to be right, because, and I've applied that to relationships, business ideas and training, where if I'm so focused on having the answer or being so belligerent about needing to prescribe precisely what I think needs to happen, I'm probably going to miss.
Yeah.
If I'm more focused on getting it right in the sense of what based on my information, what are the things that I can do to move the needle? That to me is getting it right.
Yeah.
Then it makes for a much better experience all the way around. And then I actually find that I'm able to move the needle in a meaningful way, and it no longer becomes around that. That's, you know, and a little rant here. That's one of the problems with a system or with an ideology and I think subconsciously we all subscribe to things. It's impossible to avoid, yeah. You know, and I hate the quote, well, we all have biases. No shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course we do.
So I'm going to skip that.
Yeah.
But that's the danger that you run into is like the moment you subscribe to something, a part of you closes the door on new information.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that everyone who subscribes to a particular ideology does. I think that varies in degrees on a spectrum as well.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you noticing and acknowledging that. But about my training, and I've found that if I'm going to effectively train high school athletes or even my Gen Pop clients at times, dude, yeah. Where it's like, okay, we have the plan. I have the outline. Here's our North Star. What's up? What's going on? Because, and this will end my rant. There's a big difference. People say knowledge is power. Wrong. Knowledge is not power. Everyone knows what the fuck they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
I know what I should be eating.
100%.
I know I should be working out.
Yeah.
I know my habits around my sleep. I know how I should respond in this tiff that I'm in my relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. But how often do we actually follow through with it?
Right.
That depends, right? So knowledge, knowing what to do isn't the key. It's being able to take that knowledge and apply it in a way that is actionable and practical and measurable.
Yeah.
And if knowledge was power, then then you and I wouldn't have jobs.
Correct. The people that would be running this industry would be the sports scientists and the ones sitting in the lab all day and just generating a lot of information and data, but mm-hmm. not really doing much with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, we toe the line of practicality and also just like learning the most up-to-date information. But if I am being honest, I haven't really learned a lot that's changed about human physiology in a decade. Right? So like, there's not a lot that has changed about that concept, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you know, the same stuff that made you big, fast, strong, or whatever 10, 20 years ago, maybe we've become a little bit more efficient at it.
Yeah.
Or maybe we've also just realized, hey, actually, we've been doing a pretty good job all along. It's just, we just didn't take into consideration all these other variables because we just viewed it all through this like super closed system and this like lens that's about as big as a straw. And we're just kind of looking through that thing and we're just not acknowledging like all these other things, right? Like, I mean, it can even come down to something as like, you know, when you give them, like my high school kids in particular, it's not just sports, the stress of like sports and athlete that they're navigating. It's social circles with friends. It's relationships. It's family relationships. There's so many different things that can influence that child that they are still very much a child.
Yeah, they're kids.
On a day-to-day basis, it's like, I've had, you know, oh, what's going on? You know, me and my girlfriend, we're fighting and we're this. And it's like, that will have an impact on that individual. You have to like at least acknowledge and understand, like if you have information like, oh, okay, he's dealing with like a pretty high amount of acute stress right now. That's what's impacting him. But it's like, you're never going to know that unless you actually ask and have the conversation and then are willing to just go, okay, yeah, that may actually have an impact on how he performs today. Or look at Tom Brady's last season. Tell me his divorce with Giselle did not influence his season. It absolutely did. So you can't just be like, oh, it's all about the training and it's all about all these metrics. It's because it's like there are other influences. Can I do jack shit about it?
Yeah.
No, of course not. Like maybe I could offer some advice. Probably not the best person to give advice in that area, or at least historically.
Yeah, you can't tell me that if your ex-wife started dating her karate instructor weeks after you guys got divorced, that you wouldn't be a little aloof,
a little,
in the huddle from time to time. I know he's the goat,
100%.
But for fuck's sake,
that's
a big hurdle to get over.
That's the point. It's going to affect even the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
So to think it's not going to affect any, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that that ultimately is just really like auto-regulation of training, and really just being like, what is auto-regulation? It's really just being present. Mm-hmm. It's really being right there at that very moment in time with that person in front of you.
Yeah.
That is all that is. Because if I'm operating on a set of principles or a system that it's just autonomous, I'm not there.
Yeah.
I'm not right there.
But isn't that such a relief? You know, you don't have to think.
You
don't even have to try. It's like, I got an answer for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got it. Don't worry. I'll get you fixed up. You
100%,
know,
yeah. we'll handle that.
If this, then that, you know, I'm just following the algorithm.
Yep. Exactly.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. I would. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I would say that's the beginning. And I'm sure people are, oh my God, you have to program and you have to block and you have to periodize, because that's how physiology works. And I've just realized over the years, it's just not really how it works. I think at the end of the day,
at least in that context.
Yeah, yes. I think a lot of what we do is we're just trying to fill the bucket with as little water spilling out as possible.
Yeah.
And I really think that's what training comes down to. And the fact of the matter is like, you're probably going to have more of an impact on somebody who consistently trains for years than like what you're going to impact in a block or in a...
Totally.
Like you just are. So the problems in not only in fitness as a whole, whether you view it from a generalized perspective or sports performance perspective, is still it's showing up is always the hardest part. It's actually applying yourself in that moment. Are you actually training hard, or are you also just kind of going through the motion? Like, there is a responsibility on both sides, but I've realized that it's my main job is to educate the person on why the sort of overarching reason as to why are we doing this in the first place.
Yeah.
Because if you don't understand that, good luck getting them to buy in.
Right.
You can get them bought in for so long with just the fun aspect of weightlifting, but when shit gets hard or when shit goes the way they don't want to go or whatever, if they don't understand the bigger picture of why this is important for them, it's, you know, personal training, getting people in the door and keeping them there, training in general. And it's like, those two problems are still the biggest problems that we still face today. We have not solved that problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most personal trainers, strength coaches, whatever, are going to complain about client churn. They're going to, it's
how much they're getting paid,
how much they're getting paid, how many people are actually coming in. And it's like, but they're not actually focusing on, okay, am I making people understand why it's important they come in? And then am I making them understand why it's important that they stay here?
Yeah.
And they just keep going down this path for, you know, however long.
You touched on the business aspect of things, and you know, you alluded at the beginning about starting as a trainer, working in different settings, to getting to where you're at today, which is you have a gym,
mm-hmm.
you're training teams of athletes,
yeah.
which is incredibly unique, and good athletes at that.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, you have Strength Culture, a whole entire online business
yeah.
that you've created and cultivated and continued to maintain and grow.
Yep.
A lot of trainers and coaches want to get to where you're at.
Yeah.
They do. So can you talk about your path to getting there?
Yeah.
Some of the struggles, some of the wins, some of the things you've learned along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say that I was always sort of part-time in this field. And here's kind of the funny thing is I was actually in sales for like the beginning of my sort of career. Like, fitness was not my initial career. It was always in the background. It was always sort of part of who I was through my, you know, late teens, early 20s. But sales was sort of, you know, where I was.
Let me jump in real quick. Yeah. How did sales make you feel?
I hated it, but I also, here's the thing though.
But did you learn a shit ton?
I learned a lot, but here's what sales made me realize is I was in brick and mortar sales.
Okay.
And I realized that industry was dying. You could make good money at the time, but a lot of, you have to understand that we have been professionals in this field where there has been a transition from basically only brick and mortar,
yes,
to online space.
100%.
You know, and there's a lot of appeal to online space because theoretically, online is infinitely scalable, right? Mm-hmm. You're not limited by the constraints of your local economy or your location or like how many members you can put in your building based on code.
Yeah,
how many
people can hour between 9 to 10, 10 to 11, 11 to 12.
Exactly. So there's a lot of appeal to online. So when I sort of got into fitness, I actually was sort of recruited in a way by another girl local in Clearwater. She had been a personal trainer for a couple decades. I mean, she's very smart. Ashley Gass is her name. She's sort of the one who kind of found me. She found me on Instagram. Like I was posting some fitness content on Instagram. I'm talking like 300 followers. Like this was like so long ago. Mm-hmm. And she just liked what she saw. She liked the perspective because when I was actually in sales, I was in like high end sales. So it wasn't high traffic where like people are walking in all day.
Yeah.
It was like luxury goods and stuff like that. So I had a lot of time to read. So I was doing like a lot of reading and stuff like that. And training in my spare time. So I would post about that. And she found me. We engaged over social media for a while. So funny enough, I got my start in this industry actually through social media. She was like, hey, you know, I was in Naples at the time. She was like, come up to Clearwater. She was like, you know, I'm just started working with this physical therapist. He's looking for a guy full time. And I'm also trying to branch out of just personal training. Like all she did for two decades was basically just personal training. Mm. She was trying to start more of like group classes and group fitness, but she didn't have the time to do it necessarily because she had a full one-on-one training book. So it's like, again, time is the enemy and it's also your friend. And it's like, you know, so you have to figure out a way. So,
well, it's tough there because a situation like hers, you're in the golden handcuffs. You've got clients you've had for a long time.
Oh yeah.
You're probably making enough money.
She's making enough money.
But you had you're trapped. Condo.
Yeah, exactly. Trapped. So she wanted to...
I call it the trainer trap.
Yeah, 100%. And a lot of trainers end up there, yeah. Right? It's like, I'm making some pretty sweet money, but I'm really stuck here. Like, yeah. Because the problem is we do deliver a service and you have to be there at that time to provide said service, right? So it's like, there are heavy constraints on this industry. So she brought me up, basically like try to fast forward this as much as possible. I ended up getting a full-time job with a physical therapist, working there while part-time was trying to help her start creating these group classes. And over time we did that. She had a falling out with the physical therapist because, fuck, you know, it's like, you would think that training and physical therapy should go really well together.
Yeah, you'd think so.
You would think. But the problem is that it just, you have two egos and they're kind of always battling each other. Well, yep. I said this person should do this. Well, that went on forever. And it just finally came to the point where it was like, okay, she realized we have to go build our own thing. Like I can't keep operating in the same space. Like you would think, oh, you send me clients, I train them, I get them healthy. And then it just became this circle of like, well, you're beating up my clients and they can't do this. And it's like, well, they can, you know, and it just becomes this vicious circle. So I was basically given an ultimatum at that point. It was like, continue working for physical therapist or risk it all and go and try to open this gym and facility and see if we can start, you know, building this thing out even more.
Yeah.
I got the capital to do it. I went and got an investor, like a client of ours. I just finally was like, how are we going to do this? And I was like, can we go out to lunch? Will you invest and will you help us grow this gym? Like,
shoot or shoot, baby.
Shot the shot. He said yes. We built the facility. There was some funky stuff that happened in that window of time. And then her and I worked together for a very short period of time, mm-hmm. where it just didn't work out.
Okay.
Just her and I, like, I realized that like this physical therapist sort of helped moderate the relationship. And then once that was removed from the equation,
yeah, it was only you left behind.
You have to understand that this, this woman worked by herself for 20 years.
Yeah.
She answered to no one. She made all, so it was like, it was very hard to relinquish a little bit of control.
Yeah.
So even though I was supposed to be like a partner in this thing, I basically I was an employee.
Yeah.
That's what I was. And I have no problem working. I have no problem, like, but there's just this weird thing. So anyways, it didn't work out. And that's sort of when I found Ben in ATG. He had hopefully he doesn't shoot him. He didn't have a successful gym in the sense that it was not bringing in income. Okay. His parents.
So by definition, it was unsuccessful.
It was an unsuccessful personal training business that was being financially supported by his parents.
Okay.
Let's just be honest about it, okay? And
nice.
And he had some other trainers there or whatever. But you know what? I recognized at the time, I was like, he's got some decent branding. He's got a location. He kind of had this, people knew about the gym and he kind of made it like this elite, like you can only train here if you've been invited here. So it already kind of had like this appeal.
Yeah.
Even whether it was like this false dichotomy or not.
Secret club.
It's the secret training gym or whatever. And it has its appeal because you're in there with people that like want to train hard. So it definitely fostered an environment where at least the people that were there were serious trainers.
Yeah.
And he had some strong dudes in there. I mean, some strong trainers. These were all Poliquin guys. I mean, we're talking almost every guy in there could squat 400 or 500 pounds.
Jesus.
I mean, just incredibly, incredibly strong guys. Because he just basically fostered this little group of guys and girls that basically just trained together for 5 or 6 years. And they created their own little thing, and it was great. But I went to him and I said, myself and another guy, Derek, Mr. Infinity, we realized that he had something going on. We also realized that there was the online space was opening up. This was just becoming a thing. It was untapped territory, at least for the most part. You had a lot of big YouTubers and stuff at the time, but this whole like fitness influencer and online coach, it wasn't a huge market then. And so Derek and I basically approached him. We kind of pitched him the idea. We got all the trainers because the initial concept of ATG was we had ATG and then we would have ATG basketball, ATG football, ATG baseball, ATG weightlifting, ATG track and field.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have all of these different departments. And we had so many different staff and trainers there that all their, like I came from a baseball background. Jonas was like a soccer player. Ben came from basketball. So we had like tons of different athletes that came from different backgrounds that could apply sort of this Poliquin style of training to these various different sports. That was the initial concept. Like ATG was like this umbrella and we would have all these different sort of departments and then each sort of trainer would sort of be responsible for that different area, right?
Understood.
We sat in a meeting with probably 12 to 15 people. By the end of that meeting, the only people that believed that we could do an online model was Derek, myself, and Ben.
Wow.
Ben then told all of his staff, this is the direction we're moving. If you're not down to move this direction, you're fired. And that's what he did. He fired every single one of his staff that was not on board that week, and he was all in, and we said, we're doing online training.
Listen, say what you want. That took some stones.
I will say this about Ben. That dude can make a decision. He can make a decision quickly. He does not get hung up on his decisions. And he has...
They write books about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he has no... Like... There is zero hesitation for that guy to make a decision. And I admire that about him.
Yeah, I think a lot of people spend a lot of time in the in-between space of, is this the right decision?
1,000%.
Is this the wrong decision?
1,000%.
And we talked about knowledge not necessarily being power. The power is in the action.
Mm-hmm.
You take the action. Sometimes it's the wrong fucking action.
And we got it wrong a lot of times.
Yeah.
And so that was like my biggest, like, say what you want to say about him. I certainly have. And, you know, We have rekindled our relationship since in some capacity in terms of like we have sat down and we met face to face for the first time since I left ATG and we got to talk and it was a really good conversation.
That's awesome.
So say what you want to say about him. Say what you want to say about his training system or platform or whatever. I will say the guy can make decisions and he doesn't get hung up.
Yeah.
And it does take a lot of courage and it takes a lot of just balls to do that because you're right. A lot of people get stuck in the middle of like, I don't know, what do we do?
Do I start a podcast?
Yeah, it's like, no, we just do it.
Gotta do
and
it.
If we fall on our face, cool.
Yep.
We pivot immediately. Yep. And that's what we did for a year and a half, 2 years, you know, leading right up to COVID. You know, the model changed a couple times because initially we were kind of just using ATG to market, but then we were kind of each of us sort of like delivering our own style of training. And then that basically just expanded over the past couple of years to where we all started collaborating sort of the best of us or like, what did I bring to the table? Like we all shared a lot of general knowledge, but then we had like I had a specific stuff with like the mobility and whatever that I integrated in. So we just kind of all added our own.
Is it weird seeing like ads and stuff and like seeing things come up and you're like, and all the success it's having, and you're sitting back and looking like, damn, like that was me. Like that was my input.
Yeah.
What is that like?
100%. It sucks. You know, it sucks, but at the same time, like nothing really is going to change about the situation. So I have to just acknowledge, like, regardless of how I personally feel about the whole thing, in some way, even though I'm not necessarily reaping the rewards of
the
it.
The benefits, yeah, because he's reaping some rewards.
The information that I provided, which I learned from other people, I'm not taking credit for anything. You know, I just took what I knew and I applied things that I felt were missing that I learned from other people.
Yeah.
And that was my sort of
contribution
to what the bigger picture was.
Yeah.
And the difference between Derek and I is we went into this company on sweat equity. I wasn't getting paid shit.
Wow.
So I still had to do personal training. And it wasn't until year two that I was able to nix all my personal training clients because we were finally making enough income that it was close enough to where I could be like, okay, now I can take time off of clients. We canceled all of our group classes. So there was a transition phase over that 2 years where we weren't all online. We still had some like group classes that we were running locally and we were still had like memberships. But the goal was still online, and eventually we transitioned there. And we transitioned there months leading up to COVID, right? And so here's the thing about the success of ATG. If you ask me, I'm going to tell you we would happen to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And to my core, I believe that. We had a pretty successful, we had, you know, I think a few thousand clients by year two. Pretty decent money. We had a bunch of people that had started asking us for like body weight programs or like non-equipment, because you know, Poliquin stuff is like, you use a lot of specialized equipment, a lot of specialized bars, stuff that a lot of people really don't have access to.
You need chains, you need bands.
So once we started getting more and more popular and we started sort of reaching crowds that didn't have accessibility to that, we realized, and Ben realized, we sort of had to pivot it and kind of make it to where it was more generally accessible. And a lot of people were like, hey, I don't have equipment or I don't have access to this. Can we just simplify it? So that's what happens. We basically started simplifying it to become more and more accessible. There are consequences of that, but
100%.
It basically became like, I would say the month before like COVID hit. Okay. Cause this was like January, like December, January. So COVID was kind of being talked about, but no one really knew what that meant, what was going to happen or anything. We filmed an entire bodyweight program. And we had released it like a month or two before COVID hit.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh my God.
As soon as COVID hit and no one had access to gyms, no one had access to anything, we pushed everyone over to this like body weight program so everyone could continue training. And then from that point, it just exploded. I mean, it just exploded in popularity because really people didn't have options.
Do you know how many members you guys added over any considerable period of time?
By the time I left, we were over 10,000 members.
Oh my God. How much is the membership?
The first 2 years, we, you know, 2,000-3,000, something like that, and climbing, like gradually. Like,
yeah, that's solid in and of itself.
It's solid in and of itself.
Yes.
And then when COVID hit, it just started rapidly bumping. And yeah, so from March of 2020, when COVID and everything shut down, by the time I exited ATG in June, July, you're talking an addition of 7,000 to 8,000 people.
So and how much were you guys tripled. Charging for?
$50 a month.
$50 a month. You guys had 10,000 members.
Over that, I think it was like 10,600, oh, something like that. Because just 600 or 800 members is a huge chunk of.
I feel like I need to lay down.
$50 a month.
Oh my God.
Making money hand over fist.
Wow.
Yeah, it was insane. You know, I'm in my mid-20s making almost
what was going through your
300K
head?
A year, you know, just on like online training. And like at this point, listen, we were just three guys having fun. Like that's really-
God, like y'all need a Netflix special
you,
or something,
you have
dude.
To understand that like a lot
nuts.
Of what we were doing was what we talked about yesterday. We were initially just three guys having a good time training together. We were building this platform. There was no anything like- The thing is, the falling out of ATG is very surprising to a lot of people because I will be honest with you, up until that last few months, we had no disputes, we had no arguments, everyone knew their role, everyone knew the bigger picture. It worked very well. The environment worked very well. The team worked very well together.
Yeah.
But when money comes, man, shit
changes.
Shit starts getting funny.
And
it wasn't even necessarily him. As much as it was other people that he leaned on and relied on at the time to help make decisions and stuff like that. That's really what did it in. And I can say that because that's the truth of it. And yeah. I have, you know, I, anyone who would try to tell me, say otherwise, it's fine. I have receipts. Like I will pull them up at any point. But
Jeffrey's got the receipts.
It's not about that. Like, it really was. We just had a good, and it like, yeah, like we had something that was kind of cool and people wanted to be a part of it, but we were really, that's what it was. We were just, you know, three, eventually four, because Connor Barth came into the picture later. Guys training, having fun, kicking it, sharing ideas, trying to figure out how to help people the best way we possibly could. And we just got lucky. And I think we just happened to be both like, it was a decent product. It was certainly better than a lot of shit that's still out there. And was it perfect? No. Did it have its flaws? Of course.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about business too, is like, you're constantly refining the product over time. I think a lot of people just need to, they think they need to have it perfect right out of the gate. You're not going to have, it's never going to be
that way. That's not how it
works. You have to just refine it over time. And mm-hmm. that's what we were doing, you know? So yeah, that, I mean, that's really what happened in the online space. And then I just decided to, you know, of all the people in that group, I knew that when I walked away, like, I would be fine.
Yeah.
Because I knew what I contributed. I knew my knowledge base and my knowledge level. And to be fair, like, a lot of people didn't see a lot of what I was capable of because my role within that system was very specific.
Yep.
You know, so people just assume that, oh, that he trains this way, or he doesn't train that way, or he thinks this or doesn't think that. It's not that at all. It's when you get together with a group of people, whether it's relationships, business, or whatever, you are going to sacrifice things.
Yeah.
Hopefully not your integrity, but like, but you are going to just understand the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're going to be a team player as best.
You're going to be a team
player. Lean into your strengths.
Lean into my strengths.
Yep.
And contribute to this in the best way I know how. You're not going to agree with everyone all the time, but right. It doesn't mean that behind the scenes we were like at each other's throats. We really weren't. It was a very like pretty positive, you know, work environment, and we just had fun doing our thing, and then money came, and yeah, for sure changed things for all of us, you know. What I mean, fortunately for me, I made enough money that I was able to walk away with what I had and start my own thing and have the confidence to do that. And that's what I did, and a lot of people came with me because they knew that, oh, this part of this system, this, I like, people would message me when I left and they could see a defining difference in the product with the second I exited.
Yeah.
And that's enough for me to just be like, you know what?
That's validating.
Yeah. It's super validating. And it gave me the confidence to like, okay, I'm ready to like start my own business. And at this point, like, it's not that I was not a team player, but I had two businesses within fitness that had essentially failed in my eyes at the time. And I just realized, like, my best bet is me. I can't rely on other people. And because you have to understand, COVID, this was a scary time.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking summer of COVID. Most of the world was still locked down. I had a toddler and a newborn. I now had no income. You know what I mean? Like gone, like that, overnight. A phone call was what I got. You know what I mean? We didn't even get a sit down. It was like, we got a phone call.
Whoa.
That was it. Imagine working with somebody for 3 years. Day in and day out,
building,
almost every day, building, creating, and you don't even get the respect of being sat down and looked at in the face and being like, yeah, we're going to go a different direction. I could respect somebody who did that.
Yeah.
I got a phone call. So that to me is what stung, because we were doing this for the bigger purpose. It wasn't about me. It wasn't about Ben. It wasn't about Derek. It wasn't about any. It was like, we were really just doing this for the people who were buying the product. And like, that's who it was about. 100% that's who it was about. And then I think once the money came and the popularity came, if people are being honest, they will say it definitely shifted. That being the priority shifted. And now it became about a certain individual and their ego and their whatever. And it's a hard thing to escape. I can't confidently say if I was in that situation, I would have been any differently at the time.
Sure.
Because I was 26, 27 years
right.
old. I was still a kid. I was still young and immature and made poor decisions and whatever. So I can't really hold someone to the fault, like to fault and be like, well, if I was in your shoes, I would have done it differently. I don't really know.
Yeah.
You know, when I walked away from that situation, I felt like I handled it the best I could at the time.
Yep.
Looking back, I definitely made mistakes, and I've tried to do what I can to, you know, to take responsibility for that and say, look, at the end of the day, whether it's coaching, again, business relationships, you can only take responsibility for you.
That's right.
And your actions and what you did. And if people learn that and realize that, you can walk away from almost any situation if you can look in the mirror and say, you know what? I actually did the best I could.
Yeah. I kept my side of the street clean. I showed up the best way I could.
Yeah.
And then in review, like, I think that's an important part of that process too. Is like, what could I have done better?
Yeah, 100%.
And not in a pity party, you know, sort of like, you know.
It's just controlling the variables you can control. And that's
And taking inventory and saying, you know, so, okay, things deteriorate.
Yeah.
You're stuck. You've got a toddler. You've got an infant.
An infant. He was born in January, so he was on
the world is in the middle of a shutdown.
Yep.
And now you're placed, because I can relate to that. I've been there where it's like it's nut up or shut up, and I've only got me to rely on.
Yep.
What now? And so out of that place, you create strength culture. I want to know what that process was like, what the hurdles were, what were the victories, and how have you continued to maintain strength culture?
So this is probably a good place to wrap it up for those who want to know that, you know, doing an online business and an in-person business, because it's both right now. And so my first thought was, okay, what I thought contributed a lot to the success of ATG as well was the fact that there was a physical location and a gym. And online, with everybody offering online programs, it's like, if you actually own a place or you say, this is mine, there is a certain level of authority that offers you, because it's okay, you're not just a trainer there. You are at this level of like,
yes,
I own a facility. The systems are mine. The models are mine. How I run it. So from an online perspective, I always thought, if the person's looking, who are they going to trust more? Are they going to trust? And I'm not saying this in a negative way towards the trainers. I'm just saying from a point of authority.
Yeah.
Right? Because you are, to some degree, if you are an influencer or whatever, you are a point of authority, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
People look to you for answers. You're a point of authority. What's gonna offer more authority to people? A group of guys that actually owns a physical, or some guy just training out of some other gym and just offering his two cents. I'm not saying those people aren't valuable or they're not good at what they do. I'm just saying you have to think of it from the perspective.
There's power in walking somebody, the walk.
100%. Who doesn't know, without all the context involved, who you're going to trust more.
Yep.
Right? So I said, you know what? I need to open a space. I need to have a physical space that's mine, that I can operate out of, that I don't have to work around people. I can film what I need to film. I can just do, it's mine. I can do whatever the hell I want in this space. So when I transitioned, immediately I went to a client of mine who did commercial real estate. I said, I need a space. He said, okay. He's like, I just bought a building. Literally had just bought it. They just started demoing the building. I mean, the building was not even a shell yet. They were still ripping stuff out of it. And I was like, I need a space. I will sign a lease right now. This is June, July of 2020. Who in the hell has the balls to open up a business, brick and mortar, in the middle of COVID?
This fucking guy.
I thought that was my only option. I was like, shit, I need it, you know? Because at ATG, we had a space, right? Yeah. And so I went to my client. I was like, I need a space. I'll sign a lease right now. And wow. And so when I made the departure from ATG, I basically had to message people myself, because that was the other thing. There was no formal announcement. He didn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
We exited, he cut us out, no announcement to the people, like no one really knew what the hell happened.
Right.
So that's the other thing, is it left a vacuum of like what happened, and everyone's coming up with their own, you know, whatever. And it's like, well, somebody has to address what happened. You know what I mean? You can't just leave people in mystery.
Right.
And so anyway, so went to him, I had a space, and I signed a lease in like June, July of 2020. I agreed, this is what I'm gonna do.
Jesus,
I'm building a gym. It took a year to build the gym.
Supply chain was
fucked.
I don't know if people remember, everything was a shit show.
Everything was an absolute shit show. So it actually took over a year because I actually didn't open my doors and start training my teams again until November.
Might have been a blessing though, because had you opened sooner, you know?
So the funny part is I basically built my business, even though I said that about the location, I built my business training out of a Crunch Fitness.
Really?
So all of my online business that I built from the time
you went from ATG, the pinnacle right back down to square one.
I wasn't a trainer at Crunch Fitness. I was just offering, I basically had my programs and my material that was in ATG.
Yeah.
I sent them an email and said, you guys need to cease, take it all down, give it to me.
Yep.
And then I basically just transfer that over and said, hey guys, if you were on ATG and you want it and you like this stuff, now it's available over here.
Wow.
Come do it. So that's what I did. And fortunately, I had enough people that moved instantly that I was basically good. Like I wasn't losing anything at that point. I was kind of still just like where I was when I left ATG. So that in and of itself was like a huge, I got lucky in the sense that like, yeah, enough people did believe in me and knew what I had to offer. So they followed me. So my income, it's not like I went from like in the boom to the like, I have no income now.
Right.
Fortunately, I did was able to
transfer. You had some, a bit of a safety net.
Yeah. So I was just working out of Crunch Fitness and making all my content working out of a Crunch Fitness, not as a coach, but as a member. And that's what I did for a year. That's how I built my online business. And then the gym finally opened. And you know, I'm gonna say this, opening a brick and mortar business is fucking hard work.
Yeah, it is.
It is hard work. And every single day or every other day, you toe the line of, do I want to build this into the greatest fucking training facility ever? Or do I want to burn this motherfucker to the ground right now? Excuse my language. And you are going to be the highest of highs on some days, and you are going to be at the lowest of lows on some days.
Yeah.
And even to this day, I can't tell you if Strength Culture Gym as it is and where it exists right now will always be there. And in all honesty, it probably won't.
Yeah.
Because already I'm like, oh, okay, I did this, but I didn't really do this the way I wanted it. This isn't really like the right location that I wanted it. So I'm already thinking next stages, next whatever. Yep. But what will be there is my online.
Yeah.
And so what I've kind of realized is the other thing that people don't realize about the ATG model, if you're trying to emulate it, you need to understand that there was a giant group of people, not trainers, but he had his entire family and some other friends that were doing all of the background, admin, finance, everything. So all we did was focus on the product. That's
wow.
It. Now, when I transition, it's just me by myself.
Yeah.
So I'm doing all of that for
brutal
for two different businesses.
Yeah.
Even though they are obviously connected in some way, they are two different businesses.
Yeah.
So I've always towed the line of, okay, do I build the gym business? Do I just foot the bill for my online? And so I've always kind of gone back and forth with that. And where I'm at right now is like the online is more important.
Yeah.
And I can do it without a facility. I can do it without a gym. In fact, I built the bulk of my business without my gym. So, you know, building a gym, you know, probably all said and done, my gym was probably a little over $250,000 to build it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't include the $60,000 of rent that I pay every year for it. Yeah. Right. So it's a big chunk of change. And to be honest, to like for the facility and the location and stuff that it is hard. Like even if I got it to the point where it was making money, like decent money where I'm like, okay, it still doesn't even remotely touch on the online.
Yeah.
It doesn't even come close.
So let me ask you this. And I want to wrap up with this. You have so much practical experience and pretty much every fucking aspect of it is from trainer to strength coach to online business to growing a social media platform. If there are three things that you can tell the coach who wants to be where you're at today, what are three things that they need to start doing right now, starting from zero?
Find a team, find a group. I think you have power in numbers, and when you have a group of people that are on the same purpose sort of track in terms of what they want to accomplish, and you can bring different things to the table and just acknowledge that these are my strengths, these are my weaknesses. You know what my biggest weakness is? I can sell other people's shit way better than I can sell my own. Mm. I don't know if that's just my own, like, I don't know what that is. But that's a hurdle for me. It is hard for me to say, this is what I offer. This is how much you're going to fucking pay for it. And if you don't like it, hit the door.
Yep.
I have a hard time doing that. So what I need to find, like that would be my biggest thing is, and then my admin stuff. You know, I had a business partner who was supposed to help handle, and this is not a funny thing, but I had a business partner that I did bring in to help handle the back end stuff, put all the business stuff in place for me, admin stuff, finance stuff, whatever. And then he passed away. So my business partner that I brought in a year into my business, he died. So here I am again by myself, right? Yeah. So the first thing I would say is a team. You need a group of people. Yeah. It is hard to accomplish things on your own.
Anyone who's ever had any real success, interject real quick, who's honest.
Yeah.
There are no self-made any fucking
Absolutely
bodies. It's
not.
Very rare.
Absolutely not.
Somewhere along the line, you had a leg up. Someone gave you one of these.
100%.
You know, a lift.
100%.
to get you where you're at.
Yeah.
You, and if you're real successful, you probably had a lot of people who believed in you and helped you when other people necessarily wouldn't. So
absolutely.
Build a team is one.
Build a team. I would say my second biggest piece of advice is, and I have to take this advice myself, is don't be afraid to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of what other people are going to say about what you put out there. And push. The third thing I would say is focus on your people. Focus on your people. I got away for a little bit focusing on my people that were there for me and who supported me and supported my products. And I was so busy. You need to go out and get new people. Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. You always need to be trying to access and get in front of more eyes, 100%. But if you're not taking care of the people in front of you, the people that have been there since day one, I have people that have paid for my training for years.
Yeah.
And they will never stop paying for it. They will support me until I decide this is it. Focus on those people.
Yeah.
Because they are going to take you where you need to go. They're going to build the bait. Like, they're going to build your product, help build your product for you. They're going to be your testimonials.
Yep.
They're going to be there to support you. They're going to be the people telling their friends to buy your stuff. So focus on them. Followers doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
You can have 5,000 followers and you can have a way more successful online business simply because you cater to the people who believe in you.
Yep.
You don't need a lot.
Yep.
You really don't need a lot. A few hundred, like, you want to make six figures online coaching? You need a couple hundred people to believe in you. That's it. That's all you need. Don't chase that stuff will come. Like, my follower count has gone down. It hasn't gone up. It's gone down. But my business and my income has gotten better because I started focusing on the people in front of me.
Mm.
And once you start focusing on those people, the organic reach of what you do is they're gonna sell it for you. You don't even have to start selling it. And then once you actually have the capital, then you can pump it into marketing. You can start either hiring people to sell stuff for you. Yes. Or whatever. But focus on those people. I would say those are sort of the main takeaway points, I would say. Put yourself out there. Like, trust me, I see people every day where I'm like, I can't believe they make money selling this stuff.
Yeah.
And like, a lot of times you're actually probably a lot better off than you think.
Yes.
And we're always going to be our biggest critics. And just don't be afraid. You can't be scared.
I think, to your point, and we'll wrap it up with this, Jeffrey, somewhere some guy is hovering his mouse or his finger over a buy now button that Joel Seedman's selling.
100%.
Are you more qualified than him?
Yeah.
I'd be willing to bet you are. All right, Jeffrey, where can people find you, man?
People can find me on Instagram right now. It's at The Flexible. So that's FLEXIBULL. That's probably going to change soon. I'm in the middle of sort of rebranding my online just with my name behind Strength Culture.
Sure.
Flexible is sort of the last remnants of ATG. That was sort of like my moniker. You know, we kind of all had these like funky names, which worked really well for marketing at the time.
Yeah.
You can find me there. Strengthculture.com is down right now. If you're listening to this podcast, like within relative, amount of time of this, it's down right now because it's getting redone.
Awesome.
So strengthculture.com in the near future, you'll be able to find everything there. But right now, Flexible or Jeff at Strength Culture, you can just email me for questions, for whatever. And kind of the last thing I want to say for personal trainers, coaches specifically, what I've learned in 12 years is the value of my clients has never been about what they paid me. It's the relationships that I've created with my clients. Mm-hmm. Because the times that I have fallen on my ass, those clients were there for me. And I know that the space that you're in specifically, the audience that you cater to, and probably in this gym, at least at Collective, and the way training's sort of going, people are trying, you're going to attract clients that have so much more value than what they pay you for their session.
Totally.
And I have gotten more value from my clients by just taking good care of them, being there for them in the moments that they needed it. They have given back to me more than anything they could ever pay me. And I go, okay, that's what I charge for that session. And so understand that if you're in this field and industry, the relationships that you create are the most valuable part of this, of what you will do.
Definitely.
So foster those relationships because there will probably come a time where you need those people. And if you treat them well, I promise you they will not hesitate to return the favor when you need it. And I think that's like sort of been my biggest lesson. I am where I am today. Yes, because of me, because of how I fostered myself and created my sort of philosophy and training over the years and taking care of people. But I am here on the shoulders of other giants, specifically clients who I attracted. They believed in me. They believed in my product. And when I needed them the most, they were there for me. So if you're there for them when they need it the most, I promise you these clients will be there for you when you need it, when you're ready to start your own business, when you're ready to branch off on your own and you need a little capital or maybe you need advice or whatever. Those people will be there for you. So take care of them. Take care of them.
Powerful parting words, man.
Yeah.
That's wonderful advice.
Yeah.
Everyone watching, listening, thanks for tuning in. Jeffrey Wolf, The Flexible. Thanks, give him a follow. Go find him. I'll see you next time.
Thanks, man.